I'm Brad Cresswell. Haley Taylor is here with me, and we have yet another wonderful person to talk about their connection to the museum and talk about specifically in this case something that happened just a couple of minutes ago. First of all, let me welcome you, Mark Steer. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Brad. Good to be here.
And you worked on this Learjet 28 project. Mm-hmm. It is here at the museum. It's a new display of the plane itself out here on the lawn. I just saw the dedication ceremony while Haley and I were over here chattering about, you know, what have you. But this is a big deal. I wonder if you can sort of give a little background on the Learjet 28 and its significance to this museum, this display.
Sure, sure, Brad. Happy to do that. Yeah, the Learjet 28 was developed by Gates Learjet Corporation, as it was called at the time, in 78 and certified in 1979. And the significance of the model is that it represented great advancements in aviation at the time. It was the first airplane to be certified with winglets, the upturn wingtips that you see now on just about every airliner and business jet out there. The Lear 28 behind me was the first airplane ever to be certified with that feature. And the reason for those winglets is, in simple terms, it improves the aerodynamic efficiency of the aircraft.
Wow.
It helps with climb. It helps at cruise. And
who came up with that idea?
Actually, it was this particular design was a result of research by a gentleman by the name of Richard Whitcomb at NASA back in the 70s.
Okay.
And so Whitcomb is recognized as one of the pioneers of developing the winglet technology. It's evolved well beyond what we see here today, but the basic concept is still there and still used, as I said, on most all jet airplanes today, because it does provide a more efficient airframe.
Now, tell us about Neil Armstrong's association with this aircraft.
So Neil was on the board of directors of Gates Learjet at that time in the 70s. And Learjet had this new model, which was a great performer. Learjet has always been known for performance, for aircraft performance. The name Learjet is almost synonymous with business jet. They were the first to build an on-purpose business jet, originally designed by Bill Lear back in the early 60s. And so they had this new airplane representing a lot of new technology. They wanted some publicity for it. And so they realized they could set a new record for time to climb in this aircraft for a given weight class, which is the way those records are organized. And they chose Neil, asked Neil if he would fly it. Neil was on the board of directors, so of course he said yes. Neil was a pilot first, so he'd love to get his hands on any airplane he could. And one reason they chose Kitty Hawk, the actual record time to climb flight took off out of Kitty Hawk, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And the reason was, obviously, that's where the Wright brothers first flew. And so it allowed the demonstration of several things. It allowed us to take off from sea level, which makes it for an easy record from sea level to, in this case, 15,000 meters, which is 49,000 and some odd feet. It's a short runway, still is today. It's a 3,000-foot runway, which is very short for any business jet. And so it allowed them to demonstrate the short field capabilities of the aircraft at that time. The fact that Neil flew it out of Kitty Hawk was just a nice way to tie in the promotion and the publicity that they were looking for.
Well, he was a pretty famous person at the time, having just landed on the moon
exactly.
A few years prior.
This was less than 10 years after his moon landing. By that time, he had retired from NASA and was a professor at the University of Cincinnati. Actually, Neil was one of my professors when I was there in the mid-70s. I graduated in 78.
What kind of a teacher was he?
Excellent. Honest, he was... looking back, one of the best professors, because he had that rare ability to go to the chalkboard. We did use chalk in those days. We didn't have whiteboards. Go to the chalkboard, derive all the theory of equations of motion, that type of thing, to portray the concept he was trying to explain to us. So he'd go through all the theory, put all the equations on the board, draw diagrams, but then he would sit on the corner of his desk and tell you a story about his flight test days as a test pilot that related exactly to the concept that he had just taught, whether it had to do with performance or stability and control, whatever. And so it was a rare opportunity to learn from a professor who had been there, who had that hands-on experience of what he was teaching you. And it wasn't just theoretical. He knew the theory, and he could explain the theory, but then he backed it up with practical applications. So that made the class interesting, exciting, enjoyable, and consequently, everybody did well in the class. And he was not an easy grader. He was tough.
He held the fire to your feet, right?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Were you someone who followed the career of Armstrong? How did you get into this field particularly?
You know, that's a good question. Funny story. Growing up, I always did well in math and science, and so, you know, my parents and their friends, he needs to be an engineer. what's an engineer? I didn't know when you're an engineer, early teenager. Somewhere soon after the moon landing in 69, I grew up in upstate New York, and our local paper would put fillers on each column if they, back when it was hand typeset. And there was a little filler in the local paper that simply said, Neil Armstrong, first man to walk on the moon, is now a professor of aerospace engineering at the University of Cincinnati. It's like, aerospace engineering, that sounds pretty interesting. I need to look into that. So the next day I went to the guidance office at my high school, looked up aerospace engineering. It's like, this is what I need to do. So I looked to see what schools offered. Obviously with that, I knew University of Cincinnati did. Others as well, Cornell, Syracuse, and a few others that I looked at. But Neil was a big draw, of course, to choose that school. The other big draw there was the co-op program. It turned a four-year program into a five-year program, but allowed us as students in engineering to work in the field, in the industry. And I actually spent sort of my co-op sessions at Learjet with Neil's help to connect me with them. And when I graduated, I went to work as an engineer at Learjet.
And was
involved in myself and one other engineer actually did the calculations to hand to Neil and Pete Reynolds, the other pilot that flew this mission, that gave him the target points to fly as they did the time to climb.
Wow.
Every 5,000 feet, we gave them the airspeed that they needed to target to maximize minimize the time to climb, maximize the performance of the aircraft.
I'm thinking I need to be an aerospace engineer to understand this line of thought. But that's really remarkable. And, the engineers at large, like the flight engineers, aerospace engineers, everybody who did the math, who made it possible for Neil to step foot on the moon, I think are kind of unsung heroes. Mm-hmm. So it's great that you are representing that, at least to the folks connected here with the museum. What is your connection to the museum, and how did the 28 come here?
Another good question. Actually, later in my career, I became an aircraft broker, sold used aircraft and new aircraft for a while as well. Actually, went back to Learjet in the sales organization at one time. But as a broker, I really wanted to follow this airplane because I was part of the mission. I was heavily involved at the time when we did the mission to set those records. And so I wanted to keep track of the airplane. And as a broker, I had access to information from the FAA to keep track of it. Long story short, in the several years ago, I contacted the then owner to see if he was interested in selling it or donating it to the museum. I thought this would be a great place. I met one of the board members here at that time, and he said, "Yeah, we're very interested in that, but we don't have a budget to buy it. What's it worth?" And that went back and forth, and that kind of just died out. The owner at that time wasn't going to give it away. Didn't want to donate it. Wanted what it was worth. And it was a tough market at that time to sell that airplane. Mm-hmm. Several years later, that owner sold it to the person who actually donated it, Kevin Hayward. And Kevin had a motivation to preserve the airplane. He knew the history, and he wanted to preserve the airplane. And so he contacted first the university to see if they wanted it as a teaching aid perhaps. And the university said, "No, it doesn't really fit in our program, but let me put you in touch with a guy named Mark Steer who might be able to connect you with somebody else." So the university contacted me. I talked to the seller and the owner at the time, Kevin, and connected him with the museum, and Kevin was willing to donate it. So then the money picture got a whole lot easier then all of a sudden.
Right.
And so out of the graciousness of Kevin Hayward and the activity on the museum, we were able to get it here. And as you may have heard, it flew into Auglaize Airport 2 years ago on August 5th.
Yeah, and it speaks to Neil Armstrong's career post-moon, right?
I mean,
he had a long ways to go even after that. He still was setting records and essentially test piloting different planes. I mean, it's a remarkable story to follow the trajectory of his career all the way through.
He was a pilot first. That was mentioned earlier by one of the other astronauts here. And he given the opportunity, he would talk about flying before he talked about space program. Mm-hmm. He was a pilot first.
Well, speaking about those, record-setting flights, you were part of the team that involved the world record-setting flight of Learjet 28 in 1979. Mm-hmm. What does it look like now? How have things changed since 79? Is there a new world record
in that plane for that weight class?
Yeah. There actually is. Given the detail that went into giving them the time to climb profile, the record was actually broken several years later by another Learjet 28, cert number 3. I dug into how that happened and how did they do it, and I won't get into the details, but in my opinion, it may not have been done the same way that it should have been done. Ah. We followed strict procedures set out by the international FAI, the U.S. Organization is NAA, National Aeronautic Association. In fact, we had an NAA observer on the flight, so we knew that it was done per the prescribed procedures to claim the record. But that's,
so they
that's,
cheated.
Yeah.
The drama.
Well, I didn't say.
Yeah.
I didn't say.
You have engineering expertise, and I have Google. That's basically the difference between us.
But you know, records were set to be broken, so inevitably,
sure.
It wasn't just the Lear 28. Since then, other aircraft, specialty aircraft, have grabbed a couple of those other records as well.
Well, that's why I wondered. It seems to be a friendly sense of competition of always being the best and beating the best.
Very much so. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Records were made to be broken, and FAI, which is a French organization, I won't try to pronounce. It. The U.S. arm is the National Aeronautics Association. They keep tabs on all those records. So, and that's not unusual for any aircraft manufacturer to look for, you know, what's special about this airplane? Can we find an area, a particular mission, maybe it's point-to-point or a speed course or, in this case, time to climb, and altitude records that we know we can achieve and get some publicity for the airplane. So it happens a lot.
Absolutely.
Well, that other Learjet that you mentioned was not the one piloted by Neil Armstrong.
Right.
That one is right here. Folks can come see it.
Absolutely.
Just dedicated today.
This is serial number one. It's the first production Lear 28 that came off the line. And that was part of the promotion is, you know, you, Mr. Airplane Buyer, can own an airplane that's capable of setting world records. It was a certified aircraft. It was a production aircraft. Anybody who bought that model at that time, if they had the calculations that we provided, could have
that was extra, that. Right?
Yeah.
Secret recipe. Yeah, wonderful. Mark Steer, thank you so much.
Certainly. Thank you both. It's good
sharing
to be here.
Your stories, talking to us. It's really been a privilege and a pleasure as well to speak with you.
My pleasure, too. Thank you both.